Back here at Oriole Park in Camden Yards, the Orioles in nine win a 2-1, a walk-off hit by Nick Markakis. As for tonight's game-changing moment, brought to you by Mike's Hard Lemonade, change the game with Mike's. Really, in this situation, there are two of them. The Blue Jays came into this ninth inning in a 1-1 tie. Chris Davis was hit by a pitch, was bunted to second by J.J. Hardy. And then Steve Pierce hit a ground ball, a fielder's choice ground ball, and Nolan Reimold came up, and with an intentional walk, the bases were loaded. So with two down after the ground ball, the bases are loaded, and then up stepped Alexi Casilla, and then behind him Nick Markakis. It was an error, and then Markakis took full advantage of that, and as put together by Gord Brunt and Derek Brandeo, these were the moments that dramatically changed the game just moments ago. Comes back to his hitter. Ground ball out to short. Kawasaki short hops it. Throws it on to first base. A low throw off the glove of Edwin, but he just saved the game by keeping it in front of him. Kawasaki with a poor throw, and the Orioles have one more kick at the can here to try to win it. Strike two pitch to Nick Markakis. Swinging a little chip shot down the left field line. Dropping fair. A base hit. The Orioles win it 2-1 on a walk-off single to left by Nick Markakis. An unearned run on the throwing error by Munenori Kawasaki. A heartbreaking loss, Jack, for the Blue Jays here tonight. Well, it sure was. And live to that, we just heard there, too, a strike two pitch to add a little insult to injury.
Well, you always say you never want to get beat on an 0-2 pitch, but sometimes you have to throw a good pitch, and quite honestly, that was a good pitch. Nick Markakis, all he did was throw his bat, literally throw his bat out there, made contact, deposited into left field, and that's the ball game.
So with that, the Orioles sneak out with a win right here, a 2-1 victory for Baltimore. The player of the game is brought to you by Tip Top Tailors. It's all about style. Tip Top Tailors, your menswear shop. Well, I'm going to pretend I'm Buck Showalter, and I'm going to say the player of the game tonight was Chris Tillman, struggling in three starts, 0-1 coming in here, fifth starter for the Orioles, earned run average of 7.01. You wouldn't have known it tonight, 6 2/3 innings, one run allowed, four base hits, and no decision. But for me, he was the Orioles' player of the game.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with that. It's hard to argue about Jim Johnson coming in and being the closer and getting the win tonight because it's not a closer's role. But I'm going to give it to Nick Markakis. I mean, my goodness, you coming in with bases loaded and you need to get one job done. You do the job no matter how pretty or ugly it was. He drove in the run to win the game.
And that was the game-winning walk-off piece. Mike?
I'm going with Jerry on this one. Chris Tillman just completely shut the Blue Jays down into the seventh inning. Gave up just one hit going into that seventh inning. He dominated a team that has struggled offensively, but he did exactly what he needed to do to give these Orioles a chance to pull that win out.
So a one-run win for the Orioles sets up tomorrow's second game of this three-game series. It's going to be R.A. Dickey, Jack, 2-2, ERA 4.30. John Gibbons said he's fine. He had his side session. The back and neck tightness gone. Miguel Gonzalez counters for Baltimore, 1-1, ERA of 4. And time for R.A. Dickey going after his third straight win to perhaps stretch it out a little bit. Hopefully he's healthy enough for John Gibbons and Pete Walker, the pitching coach, Pat Henkin, to not have any issues and try to go as deep into the game as he can.
Well, R.A., I think, will be fine. He pitched a gem of a game his last time out, and you could almost tell he was the guy that won the Cy Young Award last year. They just weren't making any kind of contact. He was throwing the knuckleball in the strike zone. So if he can go out there and continue along that kind of progress, it should be a good night. It's just hard to argue about what Jay Happ did tonight, too. We didn't even talk about him, but he pitched a great game. The Jays is just going to have to find a way to generate some runs.
And that was my last question to you, and it's a nice segue. What are your thoughts about a team that yesterday against the Yankees scored 8 runs on 11 hits, and they haven't done that too often, and tonight only 1 run on 4 hits against an Orioles fifth starter? What are your thoughts about how that has happened and where the offense has gone?
Well, I just still think the offense has been kind of battling themselves and trying to find some kind of rhythm. And, you know, I don't know if you can blame the weather tonight because both guys pitch well outside, commanding pitches that are really their second and third pitches. But we couldn't put together any consistent hitting in at-bats. And well-pitched game against us, but, you know, the Blue Jays need to figure out a way to generate some runs. And make more contact in certain situations.
I know they miss Jose Reyes. Thought two, another game-changing moment. Emilio Bonifacio, bases loaded, two outs in the seventh, a run in to tie it, strikes out for the 18th time with only two walks, unable to make contact.
Well, again, Jerry, I don't want to point fingers at any one guy. It's a team effort. They're struggling a little bit offensively, but you get a well-pitched game like that, those are the tough ones to swallow because, you know, you hope that everything starts clicking together, and I think the overall starting pitching has shown some signs of improvement.
So tonight the Orioles win it 2-1. Tomorrow night, join us at 7 o'clock Eastern, 7:05 first pitch after we give you the lineups, and away we go. Miguel Gonzalez, a right-hander against knuckleballer and right-hander R.A. Dickey. That's it as we sing it over to Mike now for the rest of the night.
Thanks, Jerry and Jack. We'll see you tomorrow. Right now we will talk to all y'all out there. We're going to Blue Jays talk it up. Phone lines are open at 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell, long distance 1-888-666-0590. Another frustrating loss for the Toronto Blue Jays, but please, let's not go nuts. I saw on Twitter, and maybe that's the problem, looking at Twitter after the Blue Jays lose, but dozens of people already turning on Munenori Kawasaki. Yes, it was a bad error. It was a routine play. It was a play he should have made. It's also the first error he's ever made in the major leagues. Let's remember that. 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. The Blue Jays got four hits. You want a reason for this loss? There's your reason for this loss. The Blue Jays got four hits. The offense still not going. Let's get to the phones. We'll start with Tom and Ajax listening on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Tom, you're the leadoff man on the Blue Jays talk tonight.
Okay, thanks. This is my first call of the season. I've been sitting back. I've been trying not to be negative, so I'm going to take your advice off the top there and not go nuts, but I am calling about that last play, Kawasaki.
Yeah.
I don't get it. He's got a short throw to second base. This is a frustrating error because it's twofold. It's a physical error with the bad throw to first. It's a mental error with the bad throw or bad
I'm not willing. I'm not willing to go there yet. I haven't seen a replay, but seeing it live, I thought the play was at first base. And I don't know if that's because Bonifacio wasn't there yet or if it's because Casilla, who's really quick, was, it was Reimold, who's also quick, not as quick as Casilla, was closing in on the bag too quickly. I'm not sure, and I would really love to see a replay. But
okay, it looked to me like he should have thrown it
to first. But regardless, I mean, you got to be able to make that throw.
That's what I was going to say. Benefit of the doubt may be, okay, you know, there's not a throw at second, or I've got the confidence I can make the throw to first. This team needs plays. We don't need another error, and it's not just I'm trying to run over Kawasaki on the bad play. It is a bad play on its own, but as a team, these guys are making way too many errors. The hitting and everything is not coming through, but man, oh man, like you're just hanging your team out to dry. I don't know. I'm just starting to get to the point where I'm thinking these guys just don't have what it takes. Errors kill me. I absolutely hate errors. And these guys have to suck it up and start playing some ball, or they're just going to lose all the fans that were excited about this team. I'm really getting fed up, Mike, and the next time you hear from me, it's going to be a lot worse if it's something else like this, because I'm getting to the end of my rope with the patience.
Well, I appreciate you keeping it relatively calm, even though you're getting to the end of your rope. Look, errors are no fun, but errors are going to happen. These are human beings, and human beings screw up sometimes. It's not an intent, you know, and you have to accept that physical errors are going to happen. Mental mistakes, you're right. You should always have your head in the game. These guys are professionals, and there should not be mental mistakes. And that, you can flip out as much as you want. Physical errors happen. They happen. As much as they kill you, you know, again, this is the first one this guy has ever made in his major league career.
Well, I don't know what the Japanese were for bad timing, but if I knew what it was, that's what I'd end this call with. Bad timing.
There is no question. Bad timing indeed. Thank you. Appreciate it, Tom. Let's go to Evan in London. Evan, welcome to the Blue Jays Talk.
Hi, Mike. Long-time tweeter, first-time caller.
Thanks.
Now, I know you're a big fan of John Gibbons, But
yes.
I'd love to know, I know he's your boy, I'd love to know why wasn't Casey Jansen in there in the ninth in a high leverage situation?
Because the next situation is going to be high leverage too. Right?
Yeah, but you're not going to get to the next high leverage situation if you don't have your best reliever out there. That's
yeah,
there
you know
for.
What? I'm kind of two minds in the situation of using your closer in a tie game late on the road. At home, absolutely. I'll do it. And the way the Orioles did it, Buck Showalter bringing in Jim Johnson, absolutely. And John Gibbons has done the same thing. At home, tie game in the ninth, or maybe even down one, depending on the situation, you go to your closer. On the road, honestly, I hear what you're saying, that the next high leverage situation may not come up, but it seems to be the convention anyway, at the very least, to hold your closer back. And just like Joe Girardi did the other day in extra innings and had Mariano Rivera in the 11th and used lesser pitchers in the 9th and 10th. And you know what? The truth is, too, Aaron Loop has been so good for the Blue Jays this year. It was the bottom of the order for the Orioles after the big lefty in Chris Davis. There's no Sergio Santos. Otherwise, it would have been him. I'm not saying he was wrong. I don't think he was wrong for not using Jansen, but it wouldn't have been wrong to use Jansen either.
Well,
that's definitely one that could go either way. We lost Evan. I didn't hear what he said there, but that's absolutely one that could go either way. Jeff is in Cold Lake, Alberta, listening on the Fan 960. Welcome to the Blue Jays Talk, Jeff.
Hello, Mike. Thanks for broadcasting. You guys are great on there. Keep
Thank
me in touch here. Anyways, I want to say my opinion of the whole thing is a feast or famine lineup. There's too many strikeouts throughout. And, you know, when you're striking like that, inconsistent hitting, inconsistent run production, you have to have perfect pitching and perfect defense, and that's not something that can be expected.
Yeah, but you also can't expect one run. On four hits.
No, that's what I'm saying. You know,
even with a feast or famine.
Because we can't produce a run, our pitching and defense has to be perfect every night.
Except it's the original thesis statement, which I disagree with. I mean, there are a lot of feast or famine guys in this lineup, for sure. But you don't expect them to have trouble scoring more than one run, even if they're in famine mode.
Oh, I know they shouldn't be, but when you try to generate a rally and then it's ended by consistent strikeouts, you know, Bonifacio with 18 strikeouts now, and how many at-bats? He's probably only got 50 at-bats, 54, something like that, and Aaron Seavey's in the 20s, and I love Aaron Seavey's production, don't get me wrong, but Lowry was on pace there with 8-9 strikeouts in his first 3 or 4 games. He's done better lately. Bautista and Encarnacion striking out. I just think there's just too many holes in the lineup to produce runs consistently, and then your pitching and defense has to be perfect every night. It puts the whole team in a tough spot. You know, you walk a leadoff batter, you make an error, boom, you lose the game because your bats aren't picking you up.
Well, the bats certainly didn't pick them up, but I think you're taking it a little too far when you say you need perfect pitching and perfect defense every night. You don't. When you have a lineup like this where guys are going to hit, and let's not, you know, it's very easy to talk about strikeouts, and it's easy to forget that J.P. Arencibi is leading the league in home runs right now, that Jose Bautista has hit more home runs than anybody else in the major leagues in the last 3-plus seasons, and that Edwin Encarnacion had 42 last year with a very good year all around. Look, these guys are going to score runs, and they're going to score a ton of runs. They're just not doing it on a regular basis. So
I know, that's what scares me. I love the lineup. I love everybody in there. I'm a big Rasmus fan, but, man, like the guy's going to strike. What's he must be over 20 strikeouts already.
Rasmus, yeah. He's closing in on 30.
Yeah, they're
striking out too much. They're absolutely striking out too much. I got to let you go because we're out of time. But we will continue the Blue Jays talk on the other side on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, as well as Rogers Digital Cable Channel 904, your Rogers radio app, and Sportsnet590.ca. So stick with us. We'll take a look at a couple of scores. When we return, Blue Jays lose it 2-1. They get walked off on by a Nick Markakis 1-2 duck snort with the bases loaded and two out in the bottom of the ninth. It is the Honda Postgame Show on the Home Hardware Blue Jays Radio Network.
There they go. Full count pitch. Hit on the ground to the right side. Through. A base hit. Edwin around third. He scores. On his way to third, Aaron Sebia. Rasmus back to first. He's put the Blue Jays in flight. They've tied the Orioles 1-1 here in the seventh inning.
That was the only run of the game for the Blue Jays after the Orioles scored their first run in the bottom of the sixth. A great start for Jay Happ. A great start for Chris Tillman. No offense on either side on a freezing cold night here in Baltimore, Maryland. And the Blue Jays wind up losing it in the bottom of the ninth. Aaron Loop comes on to pitch, hits Chris Davis with the first pitch. Then Davis is bunted to second, and after a huge pop-up by Steve Pierce, the Blue Jays decide to intentionally walk Nolan Reimold, and Alexi Casilla hits a ground ball to shortstop. Munenori Kawasaki can't get it to the bag. It bounces. Edwin Encarnacion can't make the pick. It's Kawasaki's first error in the major leagues. And the next batter, Nick Markakis, gets down 0-2, and then after taking a pitch, hits a little dying quail duck snort off the end of the bat to left field for the game-winning walk-off single. Orioles beat the Blue Jays 2-1. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Blue Jays Talk. We are going to 11 o'clock Eastern Time here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, sportsnet590.ca, and all other sportsnet590.platforms. Let's go back to the phones. Chris is in Toronto. Welcome to the Blue Jays Talk, Chris.
Howdy, Mike.
Hello.
Hey, thanks for having me on the Honda Post Game Show on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
No. We're not Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590 anymore.
Oh, what happened? What happened?
Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It's been a long time now.
Oh, wow. Sorry. I'll get on that. Speaking of getting on it.
If you want to do post game reads, man, you got to get them right.
Well, you know, if you posted it on the site a little bit more clearly, so I can listen to Jay's talk in my own time, that would help.
It's on sportsnet.ca on the bottom left of the Major League Baseball page. If you go to sportsnet.ca and click on MLB, the bottom left, every day, there is a link to the Blue Jays talk. Make sure you go there.
I'll check it out, Mike. I'll be sure.
All right.
But I just wanted to call in to talk positively about one thing, and that was Edwin Encarnacion's defense tonight. I witnessed, Mike, two yoga-like stretches.
I thought they were going to try to cut him in half.
Exactly. I also witnessed a hot shot ricochet off his glove and him in like a cat get back to the bag when the ball went to Bonifacio for the old 3-4-3 single put out at first.
Yep.
And at the end of the game, too, the one thing that's, that gets lost in all the noise of tonight's discussion is that he kept the ball in front of him. If the ball goes behind him, the game was lost right there. So, for all the warranted criticism of Edwin's defense at third in the past, I think he deserves accolades for what he's doing well. And my working theory on this season is that he's going from a solid defensive first baseman to perhaps a very, very good to maybe excellent one.
He's an excellent defensive first baseman. He is. I mean, I don't think he's going to win any Gold Gloves or anything. But, yeah, he's an excellent defensive first baseman. At third base, his issue was that he couldn't throw the ball. Doesn't have to do that at first. And all of a sudden, all the great stuff that he was doing over there, we're seeing now at first base. And absolutely, he is a very, very, very good defensive first baseman. And you're right, a bunch of great plays tonight.
Absolutely. And just under the overall, I'm just starting to notice instincts as well, just for the position. But
he's a good baseball player. Yeah, thank you. A good baseball player. Carlos is in Richmond Hill. You're on the Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hey, Mike. I think the fans have to be careful not to get too down. It is still relatively early in the season, although I know people keep saying that. A couple of positives.
There's only one reason they keep saying it, though, you know, Carlos.
Because they keep losing.
Because it's true.
Yeah, I think a couple positives people need to be aware of. The play that Lurie made on that barehanded with the second
run
was fantastic. We've definitely shored up the defense at third. I know he had a tough weekend in New York, but or in Toronto against the Yankees, but that'll get better. And I expect Dickey to throw another gem. I think the pitching is doing its job. Don't mean to pick on one guy, but Bonifacio, we could almost call up Anthony Gose and put goalie pads on him at second base. And it's not just the errors. I was at the Yankee game on Saturday. Even when he makes the play, if the game's on the line, he almost screws it up. Like, Encarnacion has had to stretch like Patrick Waugh in a couple plays when it's like a 5-foot throw from second base, and pretty sure I could get my 55-mile-an-hour fastball past him, too. Like, he is not a major league
player.
Yeah,
no, you can't. And, yes, he is. It's yeah, you know what? I was fine until that last sentence. Come on. Don't fall into that trap of people who had never seen the guy play before this year, so they assume that nothing that he'd ever done before this year matters. And it's a trap that a lot of Blue Jays fans have fallen into, not just about Emilio Bonifacio, but about this whole team. And I think one of the reasons that people are going so crazy about this slow start is because most of these guys are new, and most Blue Jays fans have never seen them play well. And so I think that for some reason, and I don't know rationally how you can convince yourself of this, but that's like some sort of deep-seated psychological thing that we'll have to figure out. But I don't know how you can fail to understand it rationally, that these are all people who have had success in the major leagues. They're all people who have played well, very well, and they're just not playing well right now. And because it's happened at the beginning of the season where there's been no foundation laid, I guess, as it were, it's almost like a lot of fans think this is it. They're this bad. They're always going to be this bad. They're never going to be any good, and they've never been any good. So, yeah, I mean, you got to understand. Like, to say Emilio Bonifacio is not a major league player is just, it's beyond the pale. It's saying, I've never seen him play well, therefore he must be terrible, and he's got pictures of somebody or something, and that's why he's in the big leagues. He's not playing well. Josh Johnson isn't pitching great. It doesn't mean that these aren't good players who've had great success in the major leagues in the past and should be able to do it again. Adam is in Thornhill, but we're not going to go to Adam because we have to go to break. We will go to Adam first when we come back after the 20 update. Blue Jays lose it 2-1, walk-off style to the Orioles in a game that saw a total of 9 hits. It is the Blue Jays talk on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Runners at second and third and one out. First pitch, swung on and belted. Right field, that's deep, not deep enough. It'll be caught by Bautista. Here comes Machado. Here comes the throw. It is just late. Machado scores to third, Adam Jones. A long sacrifice fly by Chris Davis gives the Orioles a 1-0 lead. That's how the scoring opened in the bottom of the sixth inning, and only because it was Jose Bautista was that throw even close. Deep right field. Blue Jays would tie it up in the top of the seventh on a two-out RBI single by Colby Rasmus, but that was the last hit the Blue Jays would get, and after Munenori Kawasaki's first major league error extended the bottom of the ninth, Nick Markakis won it with a little doink nothing single to left field to walk it off. 2-1 Orioles beat the Blue Jays. Baltimore's 11-8. The Blue Jays are 7-12. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Blue Jays Talk, and we are taking you up to 11 o'clock when... What do we got at 11 o'clock? Is it Jeff Sammet? Jeff Sammet's usually pretty good on the radio, but maybe he'll go after Raceline Radio. Raceline Radio will be on at 8 o'clock, at 11 o'clock, so stay tuned for that. And right now, stay tuned for one more segment of the Blue Jays Talk that begins with Adam in Thornhill. Adam, welcome to the program.
First call of the year. Very nice call on that Chris Davis sack fly, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Many of your other calls.
I
enjoy listening to you tremendously. This is my first call of the year because I've chosen to be a listener for a couple of fortnight now. And I have to say, I'm going to bring a little positivity to you, Mike. I am a lot more patient than the majority of your callers. We're, what, 20 games into the year?
We have
a long way to go. I'm not worried about it. Yeah, of course, the hitting is a little bit concerning, but I got to say, as far as tonight's game is concerned, first of all, Jay Happ was fantastic. Dalibar was fantastic. I mean, it's one error for Kawasaki, guys. I mean, come on, give the guy a break here.
And really, too, Loop did everything right except for hitting Davis.
Yeah,
the only
thing
he did wrong was hitting Davis.
And I want to say one more thing. I'm not the kind of guy, I like to consider myself to be an objective fan, but I thought the home plate umpiring tonight was just dreadful on the balls and strikes, and I haven't seen a game called like this since Bob Davidson.
It was a very, very poorly umpired game, but the Blue Jays only got one hit in the first six innings.
Right, but Chris Tillman's been a whip monster this year, and he's got a lot. He had at least, I'm talking about five, six calls go their way. I'm not talking about one.
Yeah, but you still got to score more than one run.
Yeah,
you can overcome. You can overcome bad umpiring to the extent that it doesn't force you to, you know, a run on four hits over nine innings.
I don't know, Mike. Am I delusional? I still don't believe in the Yankees, and I still don't believe in the Red Sox with what they have. I don't know.
20 games in, I mean, everything. I don't even look at the standings. You know, they say that you can't win a division in April, but you can lose one. That's not true.
Right.
Look at the Oakland A's. You know, look at all kinds of teams that have gotten off to crappy starts. And I had someone tweet me the other day.
The St. Louis Cardinals won the World Series, and they were nowheresville in even in August
when they got Zabinski and Dotel. Yeah, but someone tweeted me about 30 games. None of the division winners were under 500 last year after 30 games, which was true. But what was also true is that the Tigers and A's were both under 500 50 games into the season last year and wound up winning divisions. So, you know, I know it makes people angry when they hear it's early, but the only reason they're hearing it's early is because it's early. And that doesn't mean, for me anyway, it doesn't mean that the team's not playing like crap. For the most part, the team is playing like crap. But they
have tons
of time to overcome it. No, not everybody. But in the overall, they're not the only one performing consistently well on this entire team is Casey Jansen.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you for the call, Mike. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Glenn is in Brampton. Welcome to the Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Glenn.
Okay, so I know you've been consistently saying that it's early, and I agree with you.
Well, you have to.
At what particular stage is it? 40 games in? Is it 60 games in? Can we say this team that we have right now is a good indication of the team that we have? And I know you can't exactly predict it, but can you give an indication?
I think you could probably say that by the end of May.
So 60 games in or so.
It's probably more, actually. But yeah, 2 months in, let's say.
Okay. All right. I was just wondering at what particular state. Okay.
But again, I think that when you look at the players on the team, I mean, it's impossible to believe that this is not a good baseball team.
Based on past performance, but...
Based on their careers.
No, I agree. You know, I think speaking on behalf of, I guess, a number of fans who have frustration, a lot of this has to do with the media and Sportsnet, et cetera. Well, hold on a second.
But please.
No, no, but it's just
all that means. But all that means is that you and all those other fans that you feel like you're representing haven't got the ability to think for themselves.
Well, no, it's just that we can't think for ourselves, but... Whatever the media has hyped up this team for marketing reasons, etc., promoting the Jays, and I understand the fact that they did this, but the impression right from the first game in spring training was this is a great team, this is a strong team, this is the best Jays team in 20 years.
All those things are true.
Okay, well, I know, but the media sort of right from the start, without the Jays really doing anything just on paper, created this great expectation. I remember watching the first game of spring training, and they were talking, oh, the old Jays, you know, would score all the runs, vis-a-vis home runs, etc. You know, this team is going to manufacture runs. They've got speed. They've got this and this and that.
Yep.
So it was right from the start. Everything, if you watch Sportsnet, if you listen to the fan, everything, there was this incredible hype about this incredible team.
Yes.
And I guess, and then the result right now, yes, it is premature, and I agree with you, But a lot of that has to do with the media hype that was created. And that's just the climate, and I can understand the media hype that was created, but you and the media, and I'm not saying you in particular, have to accept some responsibility for that.
No. Look, the job of the media is to report the stories, is to tell you what's going on, and yeah, there's a hype machine attached to everything, right? But the truth of the matter is, if you look around, you'll see that in the United States, in these among, I don't know what the sample was, but X number of national writers in the United States and publications and that have nothing to do with Toronto, nothing to do with the Blue Jays, nothing to do with Sportsnet, you had over 70% of the quote-unquote experts in the United States picking the Blue Jays to be in the playoffs. So this wasn't some sort of a manufactured thing. This wasn't anything to pull the wool over anybody's eyes. And if...
No, I'm not suggesting that.
You kind of are.
I actually, as a matter of interest, and I haven't followed it, but I know on various sport odds, etc.,
right.
8-1 or whatever, has anything changed?
Oh, yeah, I think things have changed dramatically for everybody in Vegas.
So now have things pulled back of the Jays,
I don't know what they are, but they're definitely no longer the favorites to win the World Series in Las Vegas like they were in December. But again, that's not media hype. Didn't do that. And again, you're totally absolving yourself and the fans you claim to represent of any responsibility to think critically. You're saying the media told us this, therefore this is the media's fault.
I bet to say in part. Obviously, we have to think for ourselves, but the media, and we all had this great anticipation. We're all longing for a winner.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. But I think also people have forgotten that a baseball season isn't 20 games long.
No, I know, and I agree with you. I think something along the way of 50 games, you suggest 60, whatever. There's no magic number. But it'd be interesting to see going forward.
But look, 50 games last year, the Tigers were under 500, and they wound up going to the World Series. They were 23 and 27.
Okay. Just one other question, finally.
Yeah.
I know you've answered. You said a number of times that it was Kawasaki's first era ever.
Major League.
I'm not sure exactly his history, his record, Has he been playing Major League Baseball for a while? Has he had numerous?
No, I think this is he's played about 70 games or so in the major leagues.
Okay, so out of
which is pretty significant for a shortstop not to make an error in that many games. And I think he won four Gold Gloves in Japan.
Right. Okay. Thanks, Mike.
Okay, no problem. Thanks for the call. I appreciate that debate because I've heard that point a lot too about how this is the media's fault. And, come on. Chris is in Toronto. Hello, Chris.
Hey, Mike. I'd like to discuss the Jays' choice of using a three-man bench over the eight-man bullpen.
They're not doing that anymore.
They aren't? Oh, sorry. My mistake.
No. Sergio Santos went on the DL, and they replaced him with a position player, so...
I think they have four on the bench.
Yeah, hold on. Let me see. Today they had Asturias, Davis, DeRozan, Blanco. Yeah, they've got four on the bench now.
All right, sorry, my mistake. But also, everyone this year has been talking about Brett Cecil, how he's a change reliever. Historically, he's had a lot of problems versus right-handed hitters, and it appears that this year is the same thing again. So I'm just hoping going forward that he's pretty much just a loogie because his splits are pretty insane this year, and I just don't like him versus righties. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. I didn't think he was doing that badly against righties this year. I missed my guess. Has it gotten bad in a week? I know he's destroying lefties, which is awful fun to watch. Let's see how bad it is against righties. Yeah, 4-13. This is 4-13. But he's walked 3 as well, so that's at 7-16. That's pretty rough. Lefties are 2-12 against him with a walk. 2-21, pardon me. Maybe. We may see him as a long man. We may see him as a loogie. We're definitely seeing him in big spots against lefties late in games, and that's a good thing. Bob is in Peterborough. Hello, Bob. You're on the Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I'm 76 years old. I've been
listening
to baseball games since I was 10. I'd just like to make 2 points about April baseball.
Sure.
1962, Pittsburgh Pirates set the, at that time, record for getting off to the fastest start. They won 10 in a row. In fact, they won their 10th game. It was on April 22nd, of all things. And
yeah, things used to start later, huh?
They wound up eighth in a 10-team league. 1951, the New York Giants, they were predicted to win the pennant. They got off to something like a 3-13, 3-16 start. They lost 11 in a row. On October the 2nd of that year, the Giants' Bobby Thompson hit the home run heard round the world, beating the Brooklyn Dodgers in the playoff, and the Giants went to the World Series. It's April. April baseball is fun to listen to. Don't look at the standings until June 1st. They don't mean anything.
And the Milwaukee Brewers, you remember the 1987 Milwaukee Brewers?
Oh, yes.
The 1987 Milwaukee Brewers won 13 games in a row to start the season.
Yep.
And I think they actually had a 12-game losing streak.
The series.
No, you don't, because they weren't.
That's right.
Yeah, they didn't make the playoffs. It was the Blue Jays and the Tigers at the end that year. Milwaukee wound up.
Yeah.
They won 90
baseball.
Games, but they wound up third, 7 games out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's April. And that's, again, I appreciate that. Thanks for the call, Bob. Oh. It's not that a win in April doesn't mean as much as a win in September. Obviously, a win in April means as much as a win in September does. But you don't have time to overcome your September losses. You have bucket loads of time to overcome your April losses. Jay's in Kingston. Hello, Jay.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Oh, I'm all right. A little cold, but we closed the window, so it's warming up a little bit in here.
Yeah, you wish you were in Florida.
I was shivering the last 4 innings.
Yeah, yeah. Mike, I just have a few points here. My first point here is I was just wondering about the hitting. Obviously, that's what it seems like. Everybody's probably wondering.
Yeah,
the hitting
is not good right now.
Chad Matola, like, what credentials does this guy have? Because, like, it just seems like to me, like, I've been watching the Jays for a while, and it just seems like the philosophy seems like it's changed. Like, the guys are taking a lot of first pitches that they used to usually swing at, like, in the years past. And
you know, I had a caller yesterday, Jay, call in and complain that the Blue Jays are swinging at too many first pitches.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what he's watching, but like I've watched all 20 games this year. Actually, I was at the game yesterday against the Yankees.
I'm glad that was a good game.
Yeah, thank God, because I drove from Kingston. I would have had a heart attack if we would have scored one run. But the thing is, what I just don't understand is when Dwayne Murphy was the hitting coach, it just seemed like the guys had a plan at the plate. Like right now, it just seems like to me that they're just swinging out. They don't really have a plan. They're just going up there. You know, they'll take a pitch, then, you know, they'll swing at a bad pitch, and then their swings are long, too. It just seems like everyone's trying to hit a home run for some reason. I don't know if you're noticing that, but they're not going to the opposite a lot, which, especially with 2 strikes, obviously that leads to a lot of strikeouts, always trying to pull the ball. It just seems like a concern right now. I mean, when you're like, I think it's coming around for us. I think everyone's actually had a decent start so far. So, and the bullpens look pretty strong. I don't see a problem with that. So at the end of the day, it's just our hitting that we have to get going.
Yep. Yeah. And you can't blame that on Chad Matola. You have to blame that on the hitters. There hasn't been a shift in philosophy at all. Certainly not a shift to be passive or anything like that. But the point is well made that not a lot of guys are cutting down their swings for 2 strikes. And that's something that needs to happen. JP did it. He shot a base hit the other way tonight with 2 strikes. But not enough guys are doing it. There aren't enough Miguel Cabreras on this team. But then again, there's only one Miguel Cabrera, which is a bit of a problem. Thank you all for your calls. Sorry for those of you to whom we could not get. Thanks to Tom Young, Derek Brandeo, Gord Brunt. We'll be back at this again tomorrow night. Blue Jays lose it to the Orioles. See you tomorrow.